If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video, I am giving you two different horrifying dogman encounter stories. Now, let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. The following is the account of Captain Collins, a now-missing member of the Passgate Rangers, and the leader of the now-defunct Ranger Squadron 3, commonly known as Nightcrawlers. The following document is being made public under the auspices of Project Blackfeather, in the attempt to bring to light the dangerous and irresponsible activities of one Godwin Sinclair and his ring of associates operating out of Ravenhead, Alberta, the Archivist. Two townspeople went missing last week. We found one of the bodies just off the South Slope Road a few days ago, mauled all to hell. So much so, we couldn't even tell which of the two missing people it was. The other one still hasn't been found yet. But with the reports of half-howls, half-human screams from the edge of town, I'm guessing we're not gonna find him. Sinclair and his acolytes think some kind of lycanthrope, or monstrous animal that left the forest behind. Command told us to get ready either way. We're heading out for the ranging tomorrow, and plan to be back within a week. I'll be leading the night crawlers up the western side of the valley. The headless men will have the east. And the Ironsides will be going up the center before both of us, trying to flush whatever this thing is outwards towards one of us. Orders are to capture, but we have the freedom to kill if capture is untenable. I'm no stranger to hunting down monsters at this point, but the night before a ranging is always the worst. You never know who's coming back, or what state they'll be in. Sinclair sent us a nice rich dinner, and some wine from his personal stores though. But it almost feels like a last meal before an execution. The team is excited. And I suppose I will be too, once I'm in the field and adrenaline is flowing. It'll be the last night I get to sleep in a real bed for the next week. Or forever, maybe. Can't wait to sleep on the forest floor and wake up stiff and cold with pine needles in my ass. Bedtime. We were up before the sun, armed and knitted within an hour. And all three teams were assembled in the yard, where the Master Ranger met us and briefed us again on the situation.
Remember, Ironsides are to stay ahead of the entire line. Keep noisy and keep loud. We want this thing flushed towards the edges of the valley where the flanks can pick it up. Captains, keep frequent contact with one another. Don't break formation. If you could drive this thing across the lay, Collins, you and the night crawlers will go on alone while the others hold the riverbank in case it loops back. Understood?
The old ranger said. Got it, I called, adding my voice to the chorus of acceptance that arose from the assembled group.
Good. Now get out of here. I want a report from each captain every night.
The three teams marched out of the yard and reached Ravenhead after almost an hour. We passed through the town on the way to the South Slope Road, and a few of the townspeople who were just beginning to stir waved at us or called, "Good luck!" out of their windows. the headless men broke off first to hold the east. And it was only us and the Ironsides until they broke off a few hours later. Being the furthest from the staging ground, we were the last to reach position and spread out into a lone staggered line. This close to Ravenhead, the Passgate Forest had been cut back, leaving only rolling hills of grass and a few scattered assortments of trees and shrub. Ahead of us, as we spread across the valley, loomed the tall and ancient trees of the Passgate. Pine trees grew tall here, as they did anywhere else in the world, but that's probably the least strange thing you'll find in this valley. Nightcrawlers in position, over. I spoke into the radio.
Ironsides in position, over.
Crackled a voice from the radio.
Headless men ready to range, over.
Came a second voice.
Ironsides moving out. Give us an hour and get walking.
I switched to the radio channel for my squadron and told them we had an hour to kill. So hold position and keep an eye on the tree line. I set my backpack down on the ground and propped my rifle against it. I pulled a cigarette out from my jacket pocket and lit it. The iron smoke filled my lungs and fully waking me up. I looked down at the line and saw the smoke rising off a few other cigarettes. I shook my legs out and sat down on the grass, leaning against my bag. Even though I had been in them for years, there's still something off-putting about the Passgate Forest. Well, it's literally home to monsters, so I suppose that's a stupid thing to say. The trees themselves, though, the ground, the bushes, everything is just off somehow. I've never been great with words, but I guess the forest just gives off a bad vibe, huh? Well, whatever. This is a ranging log, not a journal. Who cares what I think? We sat for an hour smoking and checking our guns over when the call came from the Ironsides to start moving. The captain of the Headless Men and I both confirmed we were moving, and I signaled my rangers forward. I was on the far right of the line, and we were spread out so that I could just make out the ranger to my left. Enough to cover the extra ground, but not too far away if one of us found something. It's slow going when you're trying to flush something out, especially when it could be some sort of man-eating beast, so we weren't covering much ground. The whole first day passed uneventfully. One of my rangers found a footprint that turned out to just be a regular wolf. One of the headless men shot a deer accidentally, living up to their call sign. And I could hear the claymore of the Ironsides even from an hour ahead of us. Their shooting and banging echoed through the dark forest as they tried to flush out the angry monster right onto us. We were paired up with a man to our left and lit a fire, sleeping in shifts through the night so we could keep watch along with the line of fires running through the woods, which would hopefully keep our prey to the north of us. Sleep is easy to find when you've been walking with a full pack all day, but hard to rouse yourself out of. I had the first watch, so at least I had the chance to sleep till sunrise. When my partner nudged me awake with his boot and handed me a mess tin of eggs, bread, and bacon. I ate quickly and washed it down with some of the coffee that had been boiling over the fire. Warm and awake, we kicked our fire out and covered up our tracks, spacing back out to our position in the line. The voices of the Ironsides captain echoed from my radio, instructing all squads to begin moving. I passed the message down the line and we began walking again. Even at the height of midday, not much light penetrated through the canopy of Passgate, leaving us in a largely dusky state of lighting. We called a halt around 1 o'clock, which allowed us to eat a quick lunch before we kept moving. It had been a few hours when I noticed that all of a sudden, the forest had gone quiet. the Ironsides weren't making a racket anymore. Before I had a chance to think about it, a voice spoke from my radio.
All units halt. Ironsides had potential contact. Ready weapons, over.
Nightcrawlers read you, over.
Headless men holding, over.
The forest was dead silent, aside from the crack of rifles being readied that drifted towards me from down the line. Even the birds and the critters from the
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Forest were silent. We're dealing with something bad, I whispered to myself. The silence didn't last long, as a moment later, the forest erupted with the sounds of gunfire far ahead. I immediately dropped behind the trunk of a nearby tree and peeked out towards the sound of the gunfire going on. Unlike us, the Ironsides carried automatic weapons and way more ammunition. They were the heavy hitters of the Ranger units, and you could hear why. The blaze of guns lasted for maybe a minute before the forest fell back to eerie silence.
Target is moving north towards the lay, over.
Captain Ironsides said through the radio.
Did you get a visual? Over.
Captain Headless replied.
Barely. Whatever it is, it's big. Bipedal, humanoid, dark fur. Nothing more than that. Moves damn fast. Ironsides in pursuit. Both of you, move your units up closer in case it doubles back. Over.
Copy. Over. I said, and radioed to my team to make double pace through the woods. We set off on a light jog forward, guns at the ready and packs growing heavier with every step. It took 2 hours before we were in position to the left of the Ironsides line, and the headless men fell into position only a few minutes after us. A halt was called, and I radioed the Ironsides captain. How's the tracking? Over.
It's still moving north as far as we can tell. Too late to pursuit. Let's get a line of fires going just across the valley and make sure it stays north of us. Extra caution tonight, everyone. Over.
I relayed the message to my team, and we built our fires extra bright that night. I presumed that everyone would be as on edge as I was, but if they were, the ranger I was camping with didn't show a hint of fear. He fried up a quick dinner, and we ate in silence, ears alert to every small sound that came from the woods. I slept first that night, with my rifle loaded right next to me, and my knife held close to my chest. Not that a knife ever did much good against the things we usually faced, but it made me feel better all the same. I was jolted awake in the middle of the night by something that sounded like a human imitating the howling of a dog. It was piercingly loud, but seemed to be coming from a good distance off. The ranger on watch was already crunched, rifle at his shoulder, aiming off into the forest. He motioned for me to keep quiet and still, so I slowly, carefully picked up my rifle off of the ground and quickly scanned our perimeter. A moment later, the forest burst alive with the sound of a roar, a scream, and a clip of bullets being fired. My heart began to pound. The adrenaline was coursing through my blood, and I realized what I loved about being a ranger. The thrill. Me and my partner stood still as stone, guns trained towards the source of the sound, ears trained on everything else. After the initial commotion, all we could make out in the night was the sound of something crashing through the underbrush far away in the distance, followed by a deep howl half an hour later.
One of our fires got hit. No casualties, one injured. Target still heading north, over.
Ironside's captain barked through the radio, sounding out of breath. Get a good look at it? Over, I asked.
Injured ranger says 7 to 8 feet tall. Humanish, big teeth, over.
Nothing else? Over.
He swears he emptied a clip right into it. We should be able to follow the blood come the morning, over.
I read, over.
I set the radio down next to my blanket, and the other ranger nodded at me slightly.
You got 2 more hours,
he said as he laid his rifle across his lap and leaned back against a tree to resume his watch. I nodded in response and faded back into sleep. I had the last shift of the watch, and I sat for 4 hours waiting for the sun to come up, gazing off into the darkness of the night and occasionally feeding the fire. I could see the lights of the other fires in the line shining through the darkness like distant fireflies. For some reason, something about being in the wilderness just makes me feel so empty. Not in a bad way, more like the emotions just flow in and out of me like a gentle creek, without leaving a trace. Was I scared? I don't know. There's fear in me, that's for sure. But it almost feels like it isn't mine. It's like it's the fear of some ancient forgotten human who lived and hunted in the depths of the woods centuries ago. Like an instinctual fear that exists because I'm human. So there's fear there, but it's not mine. The line got underway at sunrise. All 3 units pushed forward at a reduced pace. Captain Ironsides was right. The beast was bleeding. Not a lot, but enough to track it. It was moving quickly towards the lay, and we reached the banks of the river just before the sun went down. The lay divides Blackfeather Valley in half, somewhere around the middle. It's a freezing cold river, well, more like a stream, that tumbles out of the mountain and bisects the valley, cutting the Passgate Forest in the south from the Lake Wash Forest in the north. The rangers have tried building small bridges across the lay in the past, but every time we do, something smashes it to bits. Rangers sent to guard the bridges never came back. So we gave up years ago and settled for fording the river when we needed to cross. Captain Ironsides, Headless, and I met at the center of the ranger line for a meeting before we proceeded. We were all sat around a blazing fire, drinking the crisp, glacial water of the lay from camp mugs. I say dogman or werewolf, Ironsides said. Sounds enough like one, Headless shrugged. Your man never got a good look? I asked. No, but the description is close enough. Besides, the howling after the attack is enough for me, Ironsides replied. The crawlers are ready to go over, I assume? Headless asked. Always, I nodded. The thing is wounded. I doubt it'll be that much of a problem, Ironsides said. I saw the blood trail. The wounds looked superficial. Regardless, we'll rest up and go over in the morning. Can you two split up the watches between yourselves? I asked, getting to my feet and sticking my hands over the fire. The 2 captains nodded. We'll move at dawn. I'll radio reports by the hour, I said as I returned to my rangers and filled them in, telling them all to get a good sleep and eat well. As I curled up on my blanket next to the fire, I watched through half-shut eyes as the Ironside and Headless sentries began the patrol up and down the south bank of the Lay. I fell into a fitful sleep that night, dreaming of my limbs being torn off by the jaws of some huge and horrific beast. I woke just before dawn, sweating like a pig. I splashed my face in the Lay and readied my gear before I made my rounds and woke all the other Nightcrawlers. All 12 of us were gathered at the point where the blood trail entered the Lay, checking rifles and tightening our pack straps and clothing. Captain Ironside and Headless wished us all good luck, and we splashed across the river ford, plunging into the tree line of the Lake Wash. Three others and myself formed the main group, while two rangers served as a vanguard, running behind us, two as a rear guard in the event we were followed, and a pair of two far off in the bush to our left and right. We spent the entire day on a small game trail. The blood trail had begun to fade, but the prints of the beast were still noticeable. Huge, loping strides and massive paws with claws at the end. Something that walked sometimes on 2 feet and sometimes on 4. As the sun was beginning to make its downward descent, the two rangers in the vanguard radioed in.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That there was a ranger station not too far ahead that we should be able to make just after sunset. We figured it would be a nice place to sleep on bunks and under a roof, so we decided to press on. Fully stocked and no signs of the beast was the report from the van. The two flanking pairs returned to our main body, and the rear guard made double time to catch up with us. So 10 rangers made the station at the same time, about an hour after sunset. "Damn," said the man to my right. "Yeah," I murmured. In front of us, the two rangers who had been scouting ahead were laying slumped on the ground in front of the station in pools of their own blood. Guts and viscera had been strewn around the grounds, and one of the rangers was now a head and a leg less of a man than he had been that morning. "Not even a shot fired or a radio call," another ranger said. "Secure the building. Nobody outside until sunrise. Two guards for the night at all times. Decide the shifts yourselves," I said, turning to the unit behind me. "We'll bury them in the morning." We filed inside and found that the inside of the station was untouched. It was a long log cabin filled with bunks and supplies, which had a ladder leading to the observation tower. We had built a number of these, scattered throughout the Lake Wash and the Passgate, but none were ever permanently occupied, typically just being places for us to restock and rest for the night when out ranging. Nobody spoke that night. The station was dead silent, aside from the men tossing in their beds or the occasional snoring. We rose at dawn, buried the two dead rangers, and radioed the report back across the river. We searched the camp by the light of the sun, but could only find one set of the beast tracks leading still further north, the prints caked with drying blood. "How did one of those things wounded get a drop on two rangers?" someone asked. "I don't know," I replied. "But nobody separates from the main group now. We all stick together. Be ready to fire at any time." We took our hats off and saluted the two freshly dug graves before we began to make our way north again, hot on the tracks of the beast. A sense of apprehension was growing inside me as the day wore on, and the forest remained still and silent, with still no sign of the beast aside from the trail we were following. we reached the Blackwater Lake at nightfall, the lake which Lake Wash gets its name from, and camped uneventfully on its quiet shore. I could sense the men were growing uneasy the further we ranged from the lay, but nobody dared voice a complaint. When we woke that morning, there was 9 of us left. One of the sentries had vanished in the night. There were a few footprints at the edge of the camp, but they had led straight into the Blackwater and never emerged again. "The old lady of the lake got in," one of the men said over breakfast, but none of us replied or even acknowledged that anything had been spoken. We packed and moved on, casting a few lingering, furtive glances at the glossy, still surface of the Blackwater, and continued north. Halfway through the day, we had broken out of the northern tree line of the Lake Wash, and were now on the north slopes of the valley. The trail carried on, and it only took us an hour to find what we were looking for. "Well, he made it pretty damn easy for us to find him," came the voice of a ranger from behind me. All of us had our attention fixed forward at the gapping cave mouth in front of us. Hot air was drifting out of it, and blood and bones were scattered everywhere by the entrance, which seemed to have a layer of powdered bones coating the ground like a giant, horrible welcome mat. "All right, who's going in first?" I asked, and the men behind me laughed. "F capturing the thing. There were explosives back at the station. I say we level that whole cave," one of the rangers said, and the others muttered and mumbled their agreement. "For once, I agree with you all. I don't think we're capturing this thing," I shrugged. "Max, you and me will go back for the explosives. The rest of you stay here and make sure it doesn't leave the cave." The men shifted uneasily and looked around one another, hearing that most were meant to stay behind. "There's 7 of you and 1 of it, and you know exactly where it is. Don't worry about it. We're shooting fish in a barrel at this point," I said, and I reassured my pack and motioned for Max to follow me. "Double time. We should be back in a day." Max and I set off, following our trail back to the station. We had entered the Lake Wash again, and were a few hours away from the cave, when my blood turned to ice as I heard the distant sounds of shouting, shooting, and howling. Max looked at me and I locked eyes with him. I stopped and raised my radio up. "This is Captain Crawler. Does anyone read me? Status report, over." The radio burst to life with the sound of screaming, hissing static, and gunshots. The man on the radio was yelling something incoherent at me, of which I could only make out one word. The one word I hadn't wanted to hear.
"Pack!"
The line went dead, and I attempted twice more to radio to unit, to no response. Max was staring at me, stone-faced, silently gripping and relaxing his rifle over and over. "What do we do?" he asked. I stopped and thought for a moment. I looked back to where we had come from, and then back down the trail we were following. "Same orders. We get the explosives and bury them." I ordered Max to dump any extra weight from his pack, and I did the same, throwing random equipment that I didn't think would come in handy onto the ground. We set off at a jog back down the trail again, thankful for the slightly lighter packs. We ran until well past sunset when our legs were burning and hunger clawed at my stomach. "Can you keep going without sleeping?" I asked, as I wolfed down water and some canned beef. "For a few hours at least," Max replied. I nodded at him, and we picked up our guns and resumed running. It was near 3 in the morning when we stopped, and only because the trail had become too dangerous to run on in the dark. We had passed Blackwater and, in my estimation,
would reach the station by noon tomorrow, as long as we didn't sleep too long.
2 hours sleep. I'll take first watch, I said, catching my breath and pointing at the ground behind Max. He didn't need to be told twice, and threw himself down, falling asleep immediately. I struggled to keep myself awake, pacing the perimeter of the clearing we were in, and chain-smoking the cigarettes I'd left. I nudged Max awake after 2 hours, and I laid down, falling immediately asleep. I woke to the feeling of sun on my face. That's not good, I thought to myself as I bolted upright from the ground. Max had fallen asleep against a tree. We had slept way longer than we should have. I got up and threw a splash of water into Max's face, waking him up with a start.
Get up!
I yelled, at which Max jumped to his feet and lifted his gun. Without telling him, he understood what had happened, as I could see the fear spreading subtly across his face. We began to run again, but not after 15 minutes heard a distant howl echo out from the forest behind us. The fear is not mine. The fear is not mine. I repeated to myself mentally over and over as we ran. The howls were beginning to grow more frequent and even worse, closer, the longer we ran. By noon, I figured we were almost back to the station. That's when the howling broke out from far too close. I stopped where I was, turned, and cocked my rifle.
What are you doing?
Max yelled as he spun to look at me. They're too close and too fast. We won't beat them running, I said through ragged breaths as I raised my gun to point into the woods. Max stopped, looked at me for a moment, and coming around to what I was saying, readied his rifle as well. A light mist was clinging to the floor of the lake wash, and the forest was dead silent as we stood side by side, guns trained on the trail we had just come from. The only thing that could be heard was our heavy, rhythmic breathing. As quickly as silence had settled, it was ruptured again by a howling, snarling creature that came sprinting out of the underbrush. It was massive, probably 8 feet tall if it wasn't hunched over, rippled with muscles. It had the head of some sort of mangly evil dog, and red eyes that betrayed a terrible primal hunger. It had far too many teeth for a normal dog, and the tongue that lolled from its mouth was yellow, red, and black from the fat, blood, and marrow it had been feeding on. Max managed to lose a shot at it, and it connected with the thing's shoulder, causing it to stagger slightly in its forward sprint. It was moving faster than anything I had ever seen, and leapt the 20 last feet to land directly onto Max, and send him sprawling to the ground. It snarled at me, looking like it was ready to pounce, but it snapped its attention away when Max sank a knife into its side. The extra second was all I needed. I raised my rifle and I put a bullet directly through the head of the beast, which caused it to freeze, totter for a moment, and collapse to the ground next to Max. I helped him back to his feet, but he was in a bad condition. The creature's claws had raked him all along the side of his body, and the impact of the tackle had clearly broken a number of his ribs. I clung his rifle back over his shoulder and draped his arm over my shoulder, beginning to stagger the two of us back towards the station.
Nice shot!
Max smiled weakly as he attempted to wipe the beast blood off his face.
Thanks.
We listened, and while we could still hear some howling, it sounded far off again. I hoped that this one had been the lone hunter of the pack, and we would have enough time to reach the station. We did. It took almost another 2 hours as we staggered along, but eventually we reached the station. I had radioed back to the other Ranger units on the lay a few hours back that our situation was lost, and the Ironsides and Headless Men were now moving north in full force to support us. They said they would rendezvous with us at the Ranger station. but I knew that would take almost a full day. Max died. His breathing had grown rapid and shallow, and I'm guessing he drowned on his own blood based on how much he eventually puked up. There wasn't time for a burial. I found the explosives. The pack. It's very close now. I'm thinking they'll reach the station in the next half hour, if I'm lucky. But I have the explosives. They won't know what hit them. For the first time in my life, though, I don't think the fear is primal or instinctual or whatever anymore. I think the fear is mine. Captain Collins, the last Nightcrawler. Two. For as long as I can remember, my family and I had shared a deep love for the great outdoors, particularly the enchanting allure of the forest. The allure of nature's symphony, the gentle rustling of leaves, and the melodious songs of birds never failed to captivate our senses. The verdant foliage, adorned with vibrant flowers, created a kaleidoscope of colors that danced before our eyes, while the towering trees whispered ancient secrets to those who would listen. It was a place where tranquility and serenity embraced us, soothing our souls in the embrace of nature's embrace. Our excursions in the wilderness were often brief, day trips filled with laughter, exploration, and a shared appreciation for the natural wonders around us. But the recent addition of our RV to our family provided an opportunity to embark on a new adventure, an overnight camping trip nestled within the embrace of the majestic mountains and the allure of the forest. Excitement bubbled within us as we meticulously planned our journey. We imagined gathering around a crackling fire, its warm glow casting dancing shadows upon our faces. The scent of burning wood mingled with the crisp mountain air would create an intoxicating aroma that would forever be etched into our memories. Finally, the day arrived, and we eagerly set off, our RV becoming our mobile sanctuary. The journey itself was testament to the beauty of the land we traversed. Majestic peaks rose like sentinels, their snow-capped summits piercing the heavens. As we delved deeper into the heart of nature's domain, our anticipation heightened, and our hearts beat in sync with the rhythm of the forest. Upon reaching our destination, we carefully parked our RV, a tiny fortress amidst the towering giants. The forest seemed to embrace us, its silence broken only by the distant chirping of birds bidding us welcome. The air carried a crispiness that invigorated our spirits, as if it was whispered tales of forgotten legends and ancient mysteries. With each step we took, the forest welcomed us into its secret realm. Our senses were intoxicated by the sweet aroma of pine needles underfoot, mingling with the earthly scent of damp soil. Sunlight filtered through the canopy above, created damp patterns on the forest floor, like nature's own memorizing tapestry. As the sun began to set, casting a warm golden glow over the campsite, we gathered around the fire pit. Amelia, our adventurous and nature-loving daughter, was brimming with excitement at the prospect of building a fire. Amelia's eyes sparkled as she clasped her hands together, her voice filled with anticipation. "Dad, I can't wait to make the fire. Can I help, please?" A smile stretched across her face, mirroring the twinkle in her eyes. I nodded, appreciating her eagerness to participate in this age-old ritual of outdoor adventure. "Absolutely, Amelia," I replied, my voice laced with fatherly pride. "You could gather some dry branches and twigs. Just be careful not to venture too far out into the forest." With an enthusiastic nod, Amelia seized a small weathered basket and darted towards the beckoning trees and rustling underbrush. Her russet curls danced behind her, an animated testament to her boundless energy. "Watch out for prickly bushes, sweetheart," I called out, a touch of caution in my voice. "And remember, stay within sight." Her voice tinged with determination, floated back to me on the gentle breeze. "Don't worry, Dad. Dad, I'll find the best branches." As Amelia vanished into the verdant embrace of the forest, my wife Emma emerged from our trusty RV. Her graceful movements belied her quiet excitement as she retrieved the carefully packed food provisions from within. Emma's nimble fingers unwrapped the ingredients with practiced ease. Her eyes glimmered with a mix of culinary artistry and familial warmth. She hummed a gentle tune under her breath, her love for nurturing our family evident in every deliberate action. Meanwhile, I busied myself by unloading the essential cooking equipment from the storage compartments. With the clinking of metal against metal, I extracted the gleaming grill grate and stoked the coals, preparing the stage for a delicious outdoor feast. After a while, with a skip in her step and a glimmer of triumph in her eyes, Amelia emerged from the lush foliage, clutching a trove of dry branches and twigs within the sturdy basket. Yet nestled in the crook of her own arm was an unexpected treasure, an enchanting discovery that had captured her young heart. Amelia's voice bubbled with excitement as she approached, her words tumbling forth. "Dad, look what I found! It's a small teddy bear! Isn't it adorable?" Curiosity sparkled within me as I studied the small, weathered toy she presented. Its once vibrant colors had faded, its fur slightly disheveled, but it bore an undeniable charm. A silent narrative unfolded before my eyes, envisioning the laughter and companionship this cherished possession once brought to another child. A mixture of caution and wonder mingled in my voice as I questioned. "Where did you find it, sweetheart? It seems someone may have lost it." Amelia's face radiated with innocent and genuine affection for her newfound friend. "I found it near a tree, Daddy. Maybe another family played here and the teddy bear got left behind. Can I keep it, please?" My instinctual protective nature rose, a desire to shield her from the potential disappointments that accompanied lost treasures. Yet a tender understanding blossomed within me. This small act of generosity and acceptance would foster her sense of empathy and compassion. Considering her wide-eyed enthusiasm, I yielded to the warmth in my heart. "All right, Amelia," I relented with a gentle smile. "If it brings you joy and reminds you of this beautiful adventure, then you could keep it." Amelia's jubilant squeal filled the air, punctuating the acceptance of her request with an affectionate hug, promising it a future filled with endless tea parties and imaginary adventures. After I set the fire with a satisfying crackle, the flames sprang to life, dancing and flickering in a memorizing rhythm. The golden tendrils reached towards the night sky, casting a warm glow upon our faces. The radiant heat embraced us, dispelling the chill of the evening air as we gathered around the enchanting inferno. I meticulously arranged the equipment we had brought, positioning the sturdy metal grill over the roaring fire. The scent of wood smoke mingled with the tantalizing aroma of seasoned meat, sizzling and sputtering as it made contact with the heated grates. The tantalizing melody of crackled embers serenaded our senses, a symphony of anticipation and contentment. My wife, her eyes sparkling with both determination and tenderness, deftly prepared the ingredients that would transform into a feast of flavors. The rhythmic symphony of chopping,
the aroma dance of herbs and spices, and the gentle sizzle of ingredients meeting the heated pan created a harmonious tableau of culinary artistry. Amelia, wide-eyed and filled with wonder, took her place by my side, her small hands out in eager anticipation. I showed her how to position the meat on the grill, carefully instructing her on the art of achieving the perfect sear. Her youthful enthusiasm ignited a sense of pride within me as I witnessed her embracing the opportunity to contribute to our family's culinary adventure. The crackling fire and the tantalizing aroma of the cooking meat wove an enchanting tapestry around us, casting the spell that encapsulated the essence of togetherness. As the minutes tickled by, we shared stories, laughter, and the warmth of our familial love. The darkness around us seemed to fade away, replaced by the glow of our shared experiences and the promise of a memorable night. At that moment, it was not just the flickering flames that illuminated our campsite, but the intangible bond we shared as a family. We were not merely three individuals gathered around a fire, but a tapestry of love, connection, and shared dreams. The crackling fire served as a beacon, illuminating the path towards a future filled with shared adventures, cherished memories, and an unbreakable bond that would withstand the tests of time. As we reveled in the joyous harmony of food and company, the night sky glittered above, painting a breathtaking backdrop of our intimate gathering. The stars, like sparkling witnesses, bore witness to the magic that unfolded in that humble campsite. In the symphony of crackling flames and joyful chatter, we savored the beauty of simplicity, finding solace and fulfillment in the warmth of our shared presence. It was in this tranquil moment, surrounded by the wilderness and enveloped in the embrace of our loved ones, that we realized the true essence of life's blessings, a serene respite from the world's chaos, and the unraveled joy of being together, just the three of us. As the sun dipped below the horizon, surrounding the world to the embrace of darkness, a palpable chill crept into the air, sending shivers down our spines. Wisps of mist curled and swirled around us, lending an ethereal quality to the night. Feeling the temperature drop, I retrieved a thick, cozy blanket from the confines of our trusty RV. Its soft fabric, woven with memories of past adventures, held the promise of warmth and comfort. Gently draping the blanket over Emma and Amelia, I ensured their precious forms were shielded from the encroaching cold. Amelia, her eyes waning with every passing moment, fought against the drowsiness tugging at her eyelids. Her yawns, like tiny symphonies of weariness, punctuated the tranquility of the evening. Sensing her fatigue, I knelt down beside her, my voice filled with gentle concern. "Sweetheart, it's getting late and you look tired," I whispered, my breath carrying warmth in this crisp night air. "Would you like to go to bed?" Amelia's eyes, still sparkling with the remnants of excitement, met mine. A yawn escaped her lips, a delicate melody of exhaustion. However, her spirit remained steadfast, determined to revel in every last moment of our outdoor escapade. "No, Daddy," she replied, her voice a soft murmur. "I'm not sleepy yet. I want to stay here and enjoy the campfire." Her response resonated with the boundless enthusiasm of youth, and I couldn't help but smile at her unwavering spirit. In that instant, I understood that this was a rare and precious opportunity, a chance to immerse ourselves in the magic of the night, to surrender to our allure of the crackling flames and the mysteries concealed within the darkness. With a nod of understanding, I settled myself beside Amelia, the fire's radiant glow casting enchanting shadows upon our faces. Emma,
Her hand, tenderly grabbing mine, joined us, her presence a comforting reassurance amidst the whispering night. As we sat there, the crackling fire casting an otherworldly glow upon our little circle, a symphony of silence enveloped us. The distant chirping of nocturnal creatures mingled with the soft crackling of the wood fire, creating a harmonious lullaby that serenaded us into a state of tranquil contentment. Stars like celestial lanterns punctured the inky black canvases above, their shimmering brilliance a testament to the vastness of the universe and the infinite possibilities that lay beyond our mortal reach. The fragrant scent of pine mingled with the smoky essence of the campfire, intoxicating our senses and anchoring us to this moment of fleeting serenity. Time seemed suspended, as if the world had paused to allow this respite from the frenetic pace of life. We basked in the warmth of the fire, our souls nourished by the shared silence and the bond forged through the simple act of being present with one another. And so, we remained nestled in the embrace of nature, Amelia's drowsiness giving away the wonderment, and our hearts swelled with gratitude for this fleeting moment of togetherness. As the night deepened and the campfire continued to crackle, we found solace in the understanding that these cherished memories would forever illuminate the corridors of our souls. As the fire crackled and danced, casting flickering shadows on the surrounding trees, a symphony of nocturnal sounds serenaded the night. The chorus of chirping crickets provided a soothing backdrop, their rhythmic melodies blending harmoniously with the whispering breeze. But amidst the tranquil symphony of nature, the rustling in a nearby underbrush shattered the stillness. The sudden disruption reverberated through the air, jolting us from our serene reverie. Emma's eyes widened, her hand instinctively tightening its grip around mine. Amelia, her youthful curiosity piqued, looking to me for reassurance.
"What was that, Daddy?" Amelia whispered, her voice barely audible above the crackling flames.
I cast a soothing smile in her direction, my attempt to allay any growing fears.
"It's probably just an animal, sweetheart," I reassured her, my voice carrying a calm certainty.
"Maybe a deer or a boar exploring the woods. Nothing to be worried about." Yet as the rustling persisted, growing louder and more distinct, even I couldn't help but feel a flicker of unease gnawing at the edge of my composure. The sound seemed to possess an undeniable weight, suggesting a presence larger and more formidable than initially anticipated. Emma's eyes darted nervously between the surrounding trees, her senses attuned to the slightest movement.
"Are you sure, Daddy?" she asked, her voice tinged with apprehension. "It sounds quite substantial."
Instinctively, I rose to my feet, my protective instincts surging within me.
"Stay here," I instructed, my voice firm but laden with an undercurrent of caution.
"I'll go check it out. It's probably just passing through." With cautious steps, I ventured towards the origin of the enigmatic rustling, my ears straining to decipher its source. Each crackle of twigs underfoot seemed to amplify in the stillness of the night, magnifying my senses. As I neared the tree line, anticipation mingled with a lingering sense of trepidation. And then, as sudden as it had begun, the rustling ceased, leaving an eerie silence in its wake. The once vibrant symphony of nature now seemed muted, as if holding its breath in anticipation. I scanned the darkness, searching for any signs of movement. My heart thudded against my chest. Slowly, I retraced my steps back to the warmth and safety of our campfire haven,
my senses on high alert. Returning to my family, I wore a reassuring smile, hoping to convey a sense of calm despite the lingering mystery. "It's all right," I assured them, my voice infused with a newfound conviction. "Whatever it was, it must have moved along. We're safe here." Relief washed over their faces, their tense postures gradually easing. We settled back into our makeshift sanctuary, the familiarity of the crackling fire offering a comforting embrace. Our senses remained heightened, vigilant for any lingering signs of the unseen visitor. Just as the semblance of calm began to settle over our campsite, an otherworldly roar pierced the night air, tearing through the fabric of serenity. The sound, far from the natural symphony we had grown accustomed to, possessed a menacing quality that resonated deep within our souls. Its metallic timbre reverberated through the darkness, sending icicle tendrils of fear snaking down our spines. Amelia's eyes widened in terror, her small frame trembling with the weight of the unknown. Amelia's expression mirrored the trepidation etched across our faces. This was no ordinary sound, a realization that hung heavy in the air. That doesn't sound like a deer or a boar, Emma stammered, her voice quivering with a mix of disbelief and dread. What could it possibly be? Before we could ponder further, the deafening roar reverberated through the night once more, closer this time. Its proximity shattered any illusions of safety that had momentarily settled over us. The air seemed to thicken, charged with an electric sense of urgency. Our instincts kicked into overdrive, urging us to abandon our belongings and seek shelter. "Leave everything!" I shouted, my voice laced with urgency. "We have to get to the RV now!" Without a moment's hesitation, we sprang into action. Emma snatched Amelia's hand, her grip tight and resolute, while I scooped up our precious daughter into my arms. "My bear!" she screamed and picked up her new toy. Her tiny hands clung to the worn bear with an intensity that belied her tender age. The campfire, once a symbol of warmth and tranquility, was abandoned in an instant as we sprinted towards the sanctuary of the RV. The world around us blurred into a frenzy of motion as our legs carried us with desperate urgency. Fear propelled us forward, fueling our determination to reach safety. With each pounding heartbeat, the roar grew louder, its ominous resonance seemingly at our heels, a predator closing in on its prey. Finally, we reached the welcoming embrace of the RV, its sturdy frame offering a semblance of refuge from the unknown terror that lurked beyond. I swiftly deposited Amelia into the seat, her wide eyes reflecting the same mixture of fear and relief that mirrored our own. As I fumbled with the keys, my hands trembling with a cocktail of adrenaline and anxiety, I spared a glance back at the abandoned campsite. The darkness swallowed our belongings, the remnants of our interrupted evening left behind as a haunted reminder of the inexplicable menace that had disrupted our peaceful retreat. With a trembling hand, I inserted the key into the ignition, the engine roaring to life in harmony with the echoes of the unknown creature outside. The RV became our fortress, its metal walls shielding us from the terrors that lurked beyond. As we peeled away from the once idyllic campsite, the wailing roar echoed in the distance. Our hearts raced in unison, our breaths coming in jagged gasps as we sought solace in the sanctuary of the rolling vehicle. With a trembling hand gripping the steering wheel, I pressed my foot down harder on the gas pedal, urging the RV to accelerate. The vehicle responded with a surge of power, propelling us forward with a newfound urgency.
The engine roared in unison with the thundering beat of my heart, creating a symphony of adrenaline-fueled chaos. As the wheels churned beneath us, the surrounding trees became a blur of green and brown, their branches reaching out like ghostly specters in our wake. The world outside the windows shifted in a dizzying dance, a kaleidoscope of fleeting glimpses of fleeting shadows. The headlights sliced through the darkness, casting elongated shadows that flickered and danced upon the passing foliage. Each passing plant and tree seemed to contort and twist in the ethereal glow, their distorted forms morphing into grotesque silhouettes of their former selves. A heavy silence settled within the RV, broken only by the hum of the engine and the rhythmic whoosh of the rushing wind. Our breaths remained caught in our chests, suspended in the shared state of shock and disbelief. The weight of what we had witnessed hung in the air, a chilling reminder that the boundaries of our world were not as fixed as we had once believed. The scene we had left behind in the forest haunted our thoughts, a glimpse into a realm far removed from our own, something demonic, something that defied explanation, and the malevolent presence it implied lingered like a scar etched into our memories, forever imprinted upon our souls. Minutes stretched on into agonizing hours as we raced along the windy road, each passing second feeling like eternity. Our collective relief remained just out of reach, overshadowed by the lingering unease that clung to us like a specter. The distance between the forest and the main road seemed interminable. Every curve and bend in the road prolonged our escape. Finally, the familiar sight of the main road materialized before us, a beacon of respite in the darkness. As the RV merged onto its paved embrace, a collective sigh of relief cascaded through the cabin. The weight that had burdened our shoulders began to lift, replaced by a renewed sense of safety and security. Yet despite the relief that washed over us, the memory of the demonic encounter refused to dissipate as we were heading home. We knew that what we had witnessed in the depths of the forest would never remain a haunting enigma, a testament to the boundless mysteries that lurk in the fringes of our understanding. With weary bodies and restless minds, we arrived back at the familiar sanctuary of our home. The weight of the night's harrowing encounter clung to us like a heavy shroud, making the simple act of finding solace in sleep an arduous task. We all slept in the same bed that night. Tossing and turning beneath the covers, we battled against the remnants of fear that lingered within the recesses of our thoughts. Amelia sought solace in the comforting embrace of her teddy bear, clutching it tightly against her chest. Morning finally broke through the darkness, casting its tentative rays of light upon our weary faces. The sun's gentle warmth filtered through the curtains, offering a glimmer of respite from the lingering shadows of the night. We emerged from our sleep-deprived haze, grateful for the sanctuary that our home provided. Gathering around the breakfast table, our shared silence spoke volumes. We sought solace in the simple act of breaking bread together, a family routine that offered a semblance of normalcy amidst the lingering unease. No words were spoken of the night's horrors. Instead, we focused on the mundane tasks of the morning, the clinging of cutlery, the aroma of freshly brewed coffee serving as a comforting backdrop to our collective attempt at healing. As the day unfolded, we busied ourselves with the routine tasks, finding solace in the familiar rhythms. Dusting shelves, tending to neglected plants, and cleaning up the remnants of the night's chaos became acts of therapy, a means of grounding ourselves in the reassuring normalcy of domesticity. The weight of exhaustion settled upon our shoulders, and we allowed ourselves moments of respite as the day wore on. Sunday, a day of rest, offered a reprieve.
we retreated to the cozy corners of our home, seeking solace in the embrace of soft couches and plush pillows. As the hours slipped away, a quiet calm enveloped our home. The once turbulent waves of fear and uncertainty settled into a gentle ebb and flow. Laughter and conversation began to permeate the air, intermingling with the familiar sounds of a household in motion. As the evening sun began to dip below the horizon, casting a warm glow through the living room window, we settled down in front of the TV, seeking solace in laughter and lightheartedness. I reached for the remote control, ready to immerse ourselves in the comedic world of a streaming service when something caught our attention. The TV screen flickered to life, displaying the urgent and captivating headlines of the news. A mixture of curiosity and a ting of apprehension filled the room, prompting me to pause and leave the news channel playing. The news anchor's voice echoed through the room, delivering the shocking report of a missing family. My wife leaned forward, her eyes fixed on the TV, her voice trembling with concern. Amelia, her eyes wide with curiosity, leaned closer to the TV, her teddy bear still clutched tightly in her arms as she was listening to the newsreader. This is a breaking news update on a harrowing incident that has shaken the community to its core. The Hudson family, who embarked on a seemingly routine hiking trip into the serene depths of the nearby forest several weeks ago, has tragically met a devastating fate. Today, the authorities have confirmed the discovery and identification of their remains. A discovery that has left investigators, medical examiners, and locals alike in a state of shock and disbelief. The process of identifying the bodies was nothing short of a nightmare for the dedicated team of forensic experts. The unimaginable horror that unfolded in those woods rendered their task exceptionally challenging. Their bodies, torn apart by an unknown and unimaginable force, presented investigators with an enigma that defied explanation. Their positions were grotesquely twisted, their injuries incapable and mind-boggling. Medical examiners, renowned for their expertise, were left dumbfounded as they grappled with the mysterious circumstances surrounding this tragic event. As the news reader was narrating the events, there were pictures shown of white blankets that covered bodies at the scene. I covered Amelia's eyes. The sheer brutality of their demise left them searching for answers that seemed to lie just beyond their reach. The bite marks, enormous in size and ferocity, left on the bodies only added to the perplexity of the situation. Astonishingly, DNA testing reveals that these bite marks belonged to an unidentified creature, sending shockwaves of fear and disbelief through the community. The repercussions of this shocking revelation have reverberated through the town, leaving residents on edge and gripped by a pervasive sense of fear and uncertainty. The once serene forest, a place of solace and tranquility, now holds untold horrors that have shattered the peace and shattered the lives of the Hudson family. Authorities advise everyone not to go into the forest until they find out what had happened and what killed the family. Now there was a sheriff in the news report. In light of these disturbing developments, it is my duty to advise against venturing into the forest at this time. The safety and security that once accompanied our tranquil natural surroundings have been shattered, replaced by an aura of uncertainty and fear. Folks, we cannot ignore the evidence before us, the evidence that points to an unknown and terrifying presence within these woods. I understand the allure of nature's embrace, the desire to explore, to seek solace, and to reconnect with the world around us. However, at this moment, I implore you to prioritize your safety and exercise caution. The risk is simply too great, and the consequences too dire to ignore. I urge you to remain vigilant, to report any suspicious activities or unusual occurrences to the authorities immediately. Your eyes and ears are our greatest assets to keeping our town safe. Together, we can overcome this darkness and restore a sense of security to our beloved community. In the coming days and weeks, we will keep you updated on the progress of our investigations, the country sheriff said to the reporter. In the meantime, rumors have started to spread amongst the local natives about a legendary creature that could be responsible for the murder of the family, the newsreader said to the next report with a local tribesman. Our community firmly believes that the family unknowingly ventured into the Dogman's territory, violating its domain. It's a perilous path to tread, for once you cross that line, there is no turning back. The consequences can be devastating, as witnessed by the harrowing fate that befell that unfortunate family. My advice is simple yet crucial. Respect the boundaries of nature and the creatures that call it home. Exercise caution, be aware of your surroundings, and heed the warnings of those who have come before. If you ever find yourself venturing into the forest, remember that you are stepping into the realm where ancient forests reside, forces that demand our utmost reverence and vigilance, the tribesman said. We will continue to bring you updates on this developing story as more information becomes available. Our hearts go out to the Hudson family and all those affected by this unimaginable tragedy. Please stay tuned for further updates as we strive to unravel the mysteries that lie hidden within the depths of our world. The newsreader continued, and some photos of the Hudson family were shown. The photographs that displayed the family were frozen in time. Their beaming smiles were eternally preserved. In those snapshots, they embodied the epitome of familial bliss. A husband, a wife, and a young son, their bond evident in every frame. In the last photo, it was a seemingly ordinary day, captured in the warmth of the sun-kissed background. The vibrant colors of the garden flowers painted a picturesque background, and the aroma of grilled delicacies lingered in the air. It was a moment of shared joy, perhaps a festive barbecue gathering, where laughter and mirth intertwined seamlessly. But amidst this idyllic scene, a chilling realization began to unfold. With bated breath, our gaze collectively shifted to their son's tiny grasp, a hand clasping a familiar object that sent shivers down our spines. It was none other than the very same teddy bear that our daughter had been clinging to all along.